Right. Game on. We are a bunch of people who have decided that the world of game distribution in the free software world just isn't good enough. And to alleviate that, we have created the GamingFreedom.org project. And our technology base, Gluon, which I'll be describing a little bit later. So we're a team from all over the world, like free software teams tend to be. Very nice. And we've got people from all the way over that end to all the way over there. Unfortunately, we're not quite that way or here, but we're sort of all over the place anyway. Very open, very inclusive. Again, very open sourcey, very free software. And we try to make sure that the people who know what they're talking about get to make the decisions. And what that really means is that it's not the person who writes the code necessarily, though obviously that person is likely to know what they're talking about. So it often ends up being the same thing. But that's sort of how we work. So that's the guy who is supposed to give you a demo today. Unfortunately, he's stuck in Rotterdam because of the snow. This is me. All right, normally I look like that. I work for a small company called KO out of Germany. And I was hired there to do work on Caligra, which I've just had to talk about over there, which is the office suite that KO has turned into. I'm also doing some work on Gluon under the KO hood, which is very nice to be able to do that. I've been with KDE for a considerable number of years, and I joined as part of the Amarok team making what should become a world-famous music player, at least in the free software world. And then about 2.5 years ago, I joined the Gluon team, and we got the whole vision that I'll be explaining shortly ironed out and made sure that the whole thing was coherent. I got my master's out of Aalborg University, which is a university which works a whole lot like open source groups tend to. So it's all based around groups of about 5 people working together and making projects. And the first 3 years I did informatics, and then I jumped onto the game and engine programming course and got my master's that way through. And that means that I have a master's in machine intelligence without technically being qualified to have one, which is a bit of an oddity, but there you go. I wrote my thesis on game AI, so now you know where I'm coming from. So Gluon is based on the premise that, like I mentioned, the free software world of game distribution and the world of game distribution in general isn't good enough. The reason being that this is what people think the world look like, where there's some people who make some games and then there's some people who play the games. Right. How many people in here make games? Good fair number. Now, how many of those people don't ever play games? You see my point. Because this is what the world really looks like, yeah? We have a bunch of people who play games, a bunch of people who make games, but there's a gigantic overlap. So, with that in mind, we came up with this thing that... Actually, I'm kind of with those. I've completed a single game in my entire life. I do know sort of how the rest of it looks. And I do play games from time to time. But anyway, so yeah, we came up with this thing that we want to help people who have an idea bring that, you know, out to the player. So we first need to help them actually make that idea into something tangible, something playable. So we've created a tool called Gluon Creator. And obviously, every game engine has an editor. It's not enough. So we need to be able to make sure that stuff somehow gets out to the user. So we have built into Gluon Creator, we have this tool that will package up your game and stick it on a website called gamingfreedom.org. It can also sit all sorts of other places. We're using the social desktop open collaboration services API for it, so there's no reason it couldn't go elsewhere, but obviously we promote gamingfreedom.org because that's what we do. And then to be able to play those games, you don't even have to go to the website. You've got this Gluon Player application installed on your device. I'll get back to that in a little bit. But there is a reason there are that many logos out there, and those are not enough. And then we want to make sure, because this is sort of still in that old way of thinking that players and makers of games are two different things. But most of the time, you really do want to get some feedback. So we want to make sure that everybody who has Gluon Player on their device, on their whatever that device might be, are able to, you know, get feedback in whatever shape that might be back to the makers of the game. And that can be either comments, or it can be ratings, or it can be feedback in the shape of, say, a donation. Obviously, all that we do is based around the concept of software freedom and gaming freedom as well. And to do that, we are promoting the Creative Commons licenses as what people should use for their games. The reason it's Creative Commons and not one of the Free Software Foundation licenses, I will get back to in a bit. And so we don't suggest that you take payment. We suggest that what you have is free, but we make it so easy to donate back to the authors that it really makes no difference that the stuff is free. So I have this really sort of scary looking graphic of what our stack looks like. So we've got this thing called Gluon Core, which does all sorts of stuff, has a whole load of sort of convenient stuff. It has the object serialization and all that sort of overly geeky things. And we have Gluon Graphics, which takes care of, interestingly enough, graphics, putting stuff on the screen. And we have Input, which takes care of cross-platform support for joysticks and multi-pointer input and all of that sort of stuff that isn't entirely trivial. And we have Gluon Audio, which essentially just wraps OpenAL. The reason we have another layer on top of it is because we're using Qt, and we'd like to be able to use it in a way that fits with how the rest of Qt is laid out. So we have this thin wrapper around OpenAL, so just to make it look pleasant when you work with the rest of the code, so that you can read it without getting a headache. Then we have Gluon Smarts, which is my little baby. Where you've got essentially a state-of-the-art artificial game AI system in our little tool. And then we have Gluon Engine, which ties all of those things together by providing a structured way to create these games. So you don't just have something that you use a library to create your binary games. Essentially, a Gluon engine-based game is an interpreted game. you can technically go in and not have it be that way, but that's the intention. The reason being the distribution system that I mentioned before, so that you don't have to compile anything to distribute it. You pack up your game in a zip file and stick it somewhere. Gluon Creator will do all of that for you, so you don't even have to do it. But that's how simple it is. And you have the final library called Gluon Player, which allows you to build all of these various Gluon players, where you've got one for the desktop, one for the mobile, one for touch devices or touchable phones, and touch HD, which would be tablets, and we've got IVI with a question mark, which in vehicle entertainment, so you know, mummy and daddy out driving with the kids in the back, the kids need entertainment. And then it says TV with a question mark, except that one needs the bits removed because somebody decided that we were cool enough to get into the Raspberry Pi Foundation's developer program, so we're going to be building a game console based on the Raspberry Pi and Gluon, obviously. The game sources. So what we've got here is the three things that were supposed to use OCS. So gamingfreedom.org already does, gameboom.net are working on it, and AppUp decided to scrap all of the hard work they'd done over the last 5 years and jump onto the HTML5 wagon. What can I say? More than that, yeah? So we have gamingfreedom.org, which is also this social network type thing for gamers. So if my score is greater than yours, you can always go in and say, I'm better than you. But, you know, what you have to remember is that not all of your gamers are particularly, you know, crazy. Yeah, this is the core audience for most games out there. Yeah. Obviously, you still have the slightly crazier ones who just want to, you know, no, I'm playing my game, get a fucking way. And obviously, we want to be able to do that as well. So we want to be able to support both of those, and that means that we want to push the social aspects of game distribution, but we also want to not piss that guy off because he's also quite important. Otherwise, he's going to do that at you. right, Arjen, the guy with the outfit on the one of the first slides, suggested, all right, what should I put in the presentation? And he said kittens. So. But obviously, yeah, we want to do all of the community stuff that we can get away with. So obviously, other than this being a reference, it's also a hint that we want to do more than just commenting. We want to do the whole real-time thing as well, so that things like telepathy, for example, comes in. So this is not something that we're doing at the moment, but later on, when we start implementing network support for all the games, we're going to be using telepathy to do that. And the trick for that is that we will be able to just stand on top of their shoulders and not have to worry about punching through firewalls, because they do that really well. Yes. That's a hint to the Raspberry Pi thing again. I kind of got ahead of myself there a bit because I think it's cool. We're working on you know, actually getting a complete game system put together, which, based on the Raspberry Pi and with what through a small sampling of pokings that I've managed to do with my friends. Found out that the Xbox 360 controller is about the best thing in the world. So using generic Xbox 360 controllers and a Raspberry Pi, you can get a complete game console for under €50. So the demo, need you help?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. This is where everything blows up, because the guy who's supposed to do the demo is in Rotterdam and snowed under and all such things. That's it then. We're going to have to wait a bit for this to start up anyway, so. Ooh. That doesn't look right. Right. Yeah, this really doesn't look right. There's stuff missing. Where are all the textures? Right. Anyway, so we seem to have an issue. This was compiled. Some of you saw that this was compiled as we were doing the presentation. So obviously something has blown up, and right now textures are not being loaded. That should be a pretty picture, and there should be backgrounds and things, but it's not working. But what it does show actually is that our UI system doesn't care. So this is drawn by QML, which is arguably the most powerful UI system on the planet right now. Some people would say that there are other things just as powerful, but I like Cube, so. What it does mean, though, is that we have a UI system to rival such things as, say, Scaleform, for example. Those of you who have ever done more closed, shall we say, game development will have run into Scaleform at some point, and all they do is they have this thing which will tie your game engine together with Flash. So you build your UI in Flash, and it makes shiny things on the screen, but it's really not, it's not good enough, we think. So we did this, and so since it's broken, I'll just give you some hints at what actually goes on here. So your game is made up of a bunch of assets. I'll move this out a bit. Very active mouse you've got here. Right, so all of these things you've got here are assets of various types. And that means, obviously, you got your seams and you got various interface bits. These are all QML files. Scripts done in JavaScript, because we have Qt scripts and it's mind-bogglingly easy to do. Sounds, we've got textures, all of these wonderful things. Whoop. Oh, no scroll? Right, no scroll, never mind. Two finger?
Yeah, no, just one. A little, I think, press down.
Oh, that. Never mind, it worked. So yeah, and then the trick being, obviously, since that up there is an OpenGL viewport, everything is painted on screen using shaders. So we have these material files, which are just a collection of a fragment and a vertex shader and some properties. And then to get things to show on screen, you create an instance of that, and you assign a texture and a color to it, and you name it, obviously, but it'll do that for you. Right, so in your scene, let's see, jump into the game. So in the scene, you just double click on any of these things, it loads it up in a tab here. The view is the active view of the game camera, which you can control by changing the camera controller component. But I'll get back to that in a second. So once you load up a scene, you have this hierarchy of game objects, which are just really dumb objects. They don't have any logic in them apart from positioning. So you have a position, a scale, and an orientation. But so to make them do anything, you add components to them from over here, the components dock. And then they show up here in the properties view, where you've got all of these little properties. So you've got your sound listener, for example, which is the representation of the player's head in the game world. So because of OpenAL, we have 3D positional audio. So obviously you've got need to know where your head is. And then you have the sound emitter, which then makes the sound in the same way. A background, which points to, which has a sprite renderer component attached to it, which just paints a sprite to the screen. And that's it. Now the trick with the game objects, obviously, being that if you nest them, moving the parent object will move the children along with it. It's convenient, but it's nice. And then, of course, all of the logic is hidden inside of these scripts. And so it is really just JavaScript, but very importantly, this is not that stupid shit that you use on the internet JavaScript. This is real JavaScript. So what it means is that you have a very powerful, very expressive language, which just so happens to be one of the best known languages in the world, one of the widest known languages in the world. And it also helps, as a coder, it is a wonderful thing to be able to tell your graphics people that you can do some of this. They will then make a horrible attempt at writing some code, but what they will have done is create something which you can very rapidly refactor, rather than have to try and figure out what it was they were trying to say when they were saying what they wanted you to do. So it allows you to kind of speak the same language. So and you have so in the lifetime of one of these objects, you've got an initialization function, which is essentially a constructor. We don't have all of them here, never mind. Let's see. Very hyperactive mouse. So I'll load up an empty
quick question.
Yes.
What JavaScript engine are you using?
We're using Qt script. Okay.
So that's Spider-Monkey.
Pardon?
Is that something completely different from all the other engines?
Right now we are under the hood. Qt script uses Java. What's it? JavaScript core?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But in Qt 5, they're switching over to using V8. But what really is the trick here with using Qt script rather than using a JavaScript engine directly is that it allows us to do all of these bindings that we need to create for a game engine this size much easier. You pass it an object that you've based an object on QObject, and you mark certain functions as this needs to be able to be called from a script. It's called QInvocable, but and then you just pass that script's interface to the script engine. And suddenly it knows how to create the object, it knows how to call all of these functions, it knows how to do everything that you need to do with it. Type coercion, everything. it's very straightforward to build using Qt script, and I mean obviously that's why we used it. That plus the fact that some person in here at some point is going to say Python or Ruby, and then I will point to Symbian and say, how do you get the same Ruby version on that as you get on Windows, which is nightmarishly difficult, and we need to be able to have the same engine running on all of these different platforms. And since we have Qt scripts built into Qt, if we have Qt, we have Qt scripts, and it's always the same one. So, yeah. It's very straightforward. We are a reasonably small team, so we just don't have the manpower to support that many platforms without having this stuff. But yeah, so one of these objects, you have an initialize function, you have a start function, which is run the first time the object is started. You have an object, you have an object. You have an update and a draw function. The update is called every 25th of a second. And the draw function is called whenever something gets drawn on screen, which is anything down to, I think it's 5 frames per second and up to whatever you want, which is normally the refresh rate, so about 60 times per second. But the point being that the two things are separate, so what happens on screen and what actually is game logic can be separated sensibly. So it's pleasant to write this code. And then you have the opposite of initialize and start. You have stop and uninitialize, I think it's called. And then obviously you have this little thing here, which is just a debug messaging pane to make it easier for you. You don't have to necessarily plaster OpenGL draw messages on screen. You can just debug out some lines. It's a convenience, but it's very useful to have, we found out. And that's really all there is to Gluon Creator. As in, very simple, very straightforward. It's very powerful, but it's very deliberately, designed to be simple, because we want to be able to hand it to just about anyone and get some games out of it. But of course, because of the non-loading textures, actually playing the game is not very interesting right now. So, I'm afraid that particular part of the demo is. Unfortunately, not likely to happen. Unfortunately, the guy who knew. Who had the demo planned out and everything is stuck in Rotterdam. Sorry about that. Sorry, it got a bit dry at the end. but yes, questions?
I would like to know what's your position in respect to HTML5 and like
that. HTML5 is fine. If you really like dragging your fingers across broken glass, but we have this feeling that just because you have some bathwater, you don't need to throw the baby out with it. HTML5 drops all of these powerful metaphors and tools that we've had previously. You have to reinvent the wheel to draw. To do anything in HTML5. You have a canvas, yes. But other than that, you have to redo everything. As game developers, it's obviously one of those things where you could use GameMaker 5 HTML version and just compile your games to HTML5. They've done the work for you. But, it's not for us. There's also, we're using an OpenGL viewport, which arguably is akin to the HTML5 canvas in a lot of ways.
WebGL,
for example, yeah, we'll be able to do that. And we have had some ponderings on potentially working with WebGL so that we could get a Gluon player that sits directly on gamingfreedom.org. I don't know if it's viable, but yeah, I mean, it could be fun to try. Absolutely. Yeah. Pardon? Oh, yeah, that one is, I mean, that combined with WebGL would be more what, you know, if we were to do something, that would be where we probably end up, because we have a lot of C++ going in here, so it's unlikely that we'd just be able to compile that to JavaScript and have it running properly. But with Salt, yeah, it would be possible. So Salt plus WebGL, potential web player for Gluon player. Yeah.
So it's basically built on Qt.
It's built on top of Qt, yeah.
How much of the Qt itself is exposed?
Well, in that we're using Qt scripts.
For example, if I want to add networking.
If you want to add networking, right, so because obviously this stuff is getting. You know, you can put anything on gamingfreedom.org and then people will be downloading it and everything. So we need to sandbox people. So we haven't exposed, we have, you know, very strict things that we're exposing from Qt. So there are only certain classes that you've got access to. But if you want to add networking, obviously that is also something that a lot of other people need. And, I mean, yeah, we want to get networking for games built into Gluon, you know, make that reasonably straightforward. There is no such thing as easy, obviously, but when it comes to networking, it just isn't trivial. But yeah, it's on the plan, but not in the very immediate future, but in sort of, you know, the open source soon. Yeah, and yeah. If you want to help, please, bring. Yeah.
Yeah. Just what you said. Not in the immediate future. What's the immediate roadmap?
Right. The immediate roadmap is to get this workflow completed, so that you have Gluon player, Gluon creator, build a game, package it up, click, ends up on open gamingfreedom.org, have a player, download the game, play the game, do some feedback. Ends up all the way back through the chain to get that whole thing settled, and obviously work on the graphics engine. There is optimization to be done on mobiles. We had a test version running on this, but it's there's too many draw calls currently, and we need a way of fixing that. That's an immediate goal, is getting some work done on that. So that's very, very soon.
Anybody else? Anybody else? Questions? I can just do you distribute binaries?
No. What do you mean? Sorry.
When I go to your website and download a game.
Right.
Is it all just JavaScript?
That's a good point. Thank you. I forgot to mention why I was talking about the Creative Commons and not the FSF licenses. What we're doing is that we are making games into essentially documents. So they are a collection of non-compiled assets, very much like ODF, for example. If you look at an ODF file, you can just rename it to a .zip and then unzip it. And we're doing very similar things here. in that it's just a collection of assets. So no, we're not actually distributing binaries, other than obviously there are technicalities like there are binary files in there, but yeah, no executables, shall we say. There is a plan to make it possible to have these games sort of pseudo-executable, so that you would be able to create one of these game bundles with players embedded, so that you have a very simple player that just does the playing and none of the social integration, so that you can go in and just, you know, double click on a .sh and it would launch the game inside the player window. But I mean, apart from that, no, we don't distribute binaries in the traditional sense.
So I would be able to code up a game completely in JavaScript and just from scratch.
Mm. Now the reason you're able to do that is that the engine is specifically designed not to limit you. So there is no game defining logic in the engine, really. So, I mean, other than right now, we're focusing on getting 2D right to start with. So, because there's so many 3D engines out there, but there aren't really that many 2D engines doing it right, quote unquote. But yeah, so well, that's where we're at. That's about it. Cool. Thank you very much.